What's up, heretics? Welcome to the Religion of Speed podcast, the show where the hosts are consistent and the audio quality isn't always. But we haven't figured out. I'm Matt Overstreet.
And I am Chris Huffman.
I've been thinking about that all day, how I was going to do that intro.
That's a good intro, because as much as I loved our discussion in the last episode,
yeah,
it was a little grating to listen to all of it.
Yeah, so for those of you who actually listened to the last episode, thank you for putting up with that. And also, apparently it was recording through my laptop's built-in microphone.
Which is pretty impressive, because I know that the listeners can't see this, but that laptop's about 2 feet away from me with the screen in between me and the microphone.
Right, yeah. I'm surprised it heard you at all.
Yeah, I'm really impressed now.
And this isn't a high-end laptop either. Like, this is a Lenovo T440P. Look that up. It's a brick.
Yep, but know that it's got an excellent mic.
Yeah, apparently. So if you need that, there's your thing. Oh, man. So there's actually some really cool news to talk about today, but I want to start with something that is worldly for once.
Okay.
This is world event related.
We're moving up, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our politics podcast is officially crossing with the automotive podcast. Toyota doesn't want to sell new Land Cruisers to the Taliban.
I mean, the Hilux has been the official car of terrorism for a long time.
It has.
You've been able to weld a 50 cal into the bed of that thing and drive around and be an insurgent for a long time.
Do you remember the story about the guy in Texas who sold his Tacoma, his landscaping truck Tacoma, and it somehow wound up in the Middle East with a 50 cal attached to it and still had his branding on the side door?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So his branding was immediately associated with the Taliban?
Yeah. He was getting, like, hate mail and, like, death threats and stuff. And he's like, I don't know. I sold this at auction.
Like, I don't even know how it got shipped overseas.
Right.
That's really unfortunate for him. But, hey, maybe he got some good press from it.
Right. I mean, what do they say? Any press is good press?
Yeah. And that's certainly some press.
Right. But that just goes to show how much the Taliban and, like, all the Middle East warring factions, all of them, just love their Toyotas.
Yeah. I mean, and you know what? It really speaks to the reliability of Toyota.
Right.
Because being shot at by a 50 cal while going 80 miles an hour through the desert on no roads.
Right.
That's a test that most of us are never going to match.
No. So Toyota apparently knows this. They're not in the dark about this. They're not just like putting the blinders on being like, I don't care. We're selling trucks. I don't care who it goes. Because apparently that would, if their trucks wound up in the hands of terrorist organizations, they could actually be fined in some weird roundabout way.
Even though they've already sold it?
Even though they've already sold it.
Wow. That seems, you know, as much as I don't want to support terrorism, but I don't think Toyota should be on the hook for that.
No, I don't think so either. This is just weird.
Yeah.
Weird shit. So with the new Land Cruiser, which also, let's just back up for 1 second. I don't think the Taliban's buying brand new luxury Land Cruisers, but
I mean, they are well funded.
That is true. So with the new Land Cruiser, to make sure they didn't end up in the hands of the Taliban, pretty much if you buy one, you cannot resell it for a extended period of time. I think it said 1 year in this article.
So what happens after a year when they end up in the hands of the Taliban?
Apparently that's long enough for Toyota to wash their hands of everything, I guess. So this is from a statement from Toyota. Confirm the purpose of this clause, the Land Cruiser, Toyota said, is particularly popular overseas, and we are concerned about the flow of vehicles from Japan to overseas immediately after their release, as well as the possibility of them being exported to certain regions where security regulations are in place. There is a risk of violating foreign exchange law, and depending on the export destination, it may lead to a major problems that threaten global security.
Oh, so they're trying to say that Toyota is not able to sell vehicles in that area, and because they're less than a year old, they must have been involved somehow.
Yeah, pretty much.
Interesting. I was wondering how they were coming after them, but I guess after a year, everything is okay.
It just, you know, they can kind of be like, hey, we had no business and how that got there at that point.
Right.
You know, but if it's like a brand new Land Cruiser showing up on the news with a 50 cal strapped to it and Toyota's like, you know, just cashing that check at that moment, it's a bad look.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it kind of makes you look guilty. That's actually kind of a hilarious image.
Right. But this is also like, yeah, Toyota said at the time that although its policies prohibited sales to potential purchasers who may use or modify them for paramilitary or terrorist activities. Like, what other manufacturer has ever had to have a clause to keep paramilitary and terrorist activities out of their vehicles?
I mean, they're so reliable,
right,
that it's become a problem.
It is. Yeah. They're too reliable.
They're too good.
Yeah. And like, that's like the greatest advertisement for a Land Cruiser.
It really is. I mean, they're selling cars that are designed for just passenger use.
Right.
That people are bringing into military applications and they're still running.
Right.
They're going through the most torturous testing you could possibly imagine. And it's hilarious that they're now a victim of their own success.
Right. It's like, it's almost the opposite. So there's always those military guys that get out of the military and want to buy a Humvee or a, you know, H1 Hummer. You know?
Yeah.
But like, it's never like the other way around. Like, the Taliban's not like trying to import fucking H1 Hummers and shit. You know, they're not trying to circumvent that.
Right.
Because those things are such hot garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, even the army has trouble keeping those running.
Right.
Like, they up armor these Humvees and they become so heavy that they end up overheating because of the energy that the engine has to exert just to move the thing.
Right. And it's got some non-turbo shitty diesel engine in it, which makes like 100 horsepower.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've talked to several people in the military and nobody has anything good to say about the Humvees.
No. No, they're all like, that's why I always find it weird when people want those trucks.
You know, you used to be able to get them really cheap in military, like post-military auctions, military surplus stuff.
And I guess as like a farm vehicle, I could see that.
It could be good. It could pull a lot.
Right. Also, if you haven't seen the 2022 Land Cruiser, I like it.
It does look nice.
It also does kind of look like a new Armada, but
everybody copies everybody now.
Right.
The new Frontier looks just like a Tacoma.
Oh, exactly like a Tacoma.
And they know. It's like, well, why'd you buy a Frontier? Well, the Tacoma was too expensive.
Right, exactly. But the Frontier looks great. So there's a render we're looking at right now of a brand new 2022 Land Cruiser, like actually outfitted for off-road, snorkel, winch, big off-road tires.
That looks nice.
Yeah. Has like the Toyota off-road grill kind of thing treatment to it instead of the chromey grill that it comes with, you know?
Yeah. I honestly like that blacked out grill a lot better.
Yeah. So if I remember correctly, is the U.S. not getting the new Land Cruiser?
I'm not sure. I don't keep up with SUVs as much as I should.
I seem to remember that. I'm not too worried about that either, just because this is like a $80,000 SUV. It's
once you get it loaded up. Because since it's a Toyota, if it is for sale in the U.S., you could buy it for $80,000 and drive it for 3 years and sell it for $90,000.
Right? Yeah. Ridiculous. Also, this is also one of the last handmade vehicles.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's actually hand-built.
Yeah. Like the Nissan GTRs were hand-built.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I wonder if that means there's going to be like a slight variance in things like they're on the GTR.
Probably. I mean, it's Toyota, so, you know, they're probably going to have their standards pretty tight.
They do have an entire city devoted to R&D.
This is true. But so if you do buy a Toyota Land Cruiser, you can't flip it and sell it right away, which I think Toyota is also not just Taliban aside. I think they just don't want scalpers buying them up and reselling them right away and great gray market imports and shit like that.
Yeah, like they're seeing with the Tacomas and the 4Runners right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they getting that the 4Runners and Tacomas?
Yeah, they're holding their value so much that, you know, anyone who has the money to buy them knows that they can make that money back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a... It's kind of cool that if that's, like, the real reason, you know? Like, they want people to actually have access to their vehicles. And also, you know, when a scalper's buying your stuff and reselling it at a higher price, that means you're leaving money on the table.
Right.
That means you could sell it for whatever that price is.
Well, it just seems like scalpers have like taken over everything.
Yeah.
Like, you want to buy concert tickets? Scalpers. You want to buy GPUs for computers? Scalpers. You want to buy cars? Scalpers. Like, anything you want to buy.
Yeah.
Like, but there's people, like, scalping video games and shit.
I mean, when you get a crisis like the global pandemic, you know, people with the resources are always going to take advantage.
Yeah. But it's just, it's ridiculous.
It really is, because people who don't have the resources like us, we're left to kind of pick through what's left.
Right. Like, I'm trying to get a new GPU for this computer. I want a new graphics card just because this one's old as fuck is why.
Yeah.
So it's an NVIDIA 3080 or 3070. Sorry, 3070 is the one I want. 3080 is like the big boy. Okay. I don't have the money for that. But I had to get on a waiting list from one of the manufacturers, and they'll let me know when they get some in stock, if I even get selected. So they'll get some in stock. They'll do a random draw of the people on the wait list.
So you have to win a lottery to have the opportunity to buy this GPU.
Yes.
As if it were like a Ferrari Enzo.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That is wild.
And then the GPU still costs $800.
So you have to be, you know, blessed with the privilege to spend that.
To spend $800. And the ridiculous part is I could then take that same GPU and plop it on eBay for 2 G's.
So that's what they're going for if you want to skip the line.
Yeah.
That is insane.
Right?
So, yeah, these shortages are really causing a lot of issues.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Everything's going up in price.
Yeah, and it's a shame because, you know, we like to buy the cheap stuff and make it nice.
Right? And the cheap stuff's just not existing anymore.
Yeah, you used to be able to go on YouTube and see videos of, you know, top 5 cars you can buy for under 5 grand.
Right.
Now, it's good 10 luck. Grand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to buy a car for 5 grand, it's going to be clapped out some old American front-wheel drive piece of shit or something.
Yeah, you're going to be lucky right? to get something that runs.
You're going to get an old Buick Regal or something.
Oh, man, the Buick Regal.
There are some cool Regals, but we'll get into that another day. One cool car that I really hope doesn't get affected by price inflation, but I know is going to get incredibly price inflated from dealers, is the new Z.
There's going to be a ton of dealer markup on this thing.
It's going to be ridiculous,
which
dude.
Is really sad because Nissan's trying to, which they haven't released any pricing info, official pricing info yet.
Right.
You know, it's supposed to be a $35,000 car. Did they?
I thought they did with the reveal. So they did their official reveal.
The one in New York.
Was it in New York? They did a live stream. Yeah. I don't remember where it was. But I'm pretty sure they had a price on that. Sure it was around $35,000.
Because I remember it was funny. I was thinking we're going to be the last automotive people to cover this release.
Yeah.
Because it came out a couple weeks ago and every YouTube channel says, goodbye, Supra.
Yeah. It's funny. Like everybody else was doing it. I was like, well, we'll get to it in a week and a half.
Yeah. Well, in time, it'll be worth it.
Maybe they didn't reveal a price yet.
So I don't think they teased a price, but I don't think that they've officially... Okay, this says Nissan Insider Spills, so this is a leak.
This is a leak, okay.
So
I think everybody's going... Even if it's anywhere from 35 to 40, though.
Right.
Like, let's use that range.
Yeah.
That still, I think, puts a big dent in the Supra.
Oh, it does. I mean, it puts a big dent in the 8.6 and the BRZ.
Right.
You know, for a few $1,000 more, you can double your power output.
Right.
And, you know, you were sad you didn't get one turbo. Here's two.
Right. Have a couple. And people are, you know, we're saying, like, kind of making fun of the new Z because it is, at the end of the day, a redone 370Z chassis.
Right.
Which is a redone 350Z chassis.
Yeah.
So the chassis is kind of long in the tooth. But the chief engineer of the new Z, this was an article that was going around all over the place. He put out a thing, he said, it will be a dance partner.
It's not for lap times.
Right?
Yeah.
But that makes you feel good, though, because that means they want this chassis to be lively.
Yeah, they want it to be fun.
Right.
And they're coming out with a manual. You know, Toyota didn't do that with the Supra.
No, yeah. I feel like with the Supra, they weren't as focused. Like, I feel like they had the 8.6.
Right.
You know, that was like their fun car.
Yeah, that's their dance partner.
Yeah. And the Supra was more like, let's finally just put this name on something and cash in on the nostalgia.
Yeah. And it takes itself too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if a Supra that only comes in an automatic, Like, it takes itself too seriously.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, well, you don't need that. This is faster. It's like, it's not about need.
Right.
Supras were never about need.
I get that it's faster.
Yeah.
And if you want to make a Supra, I don't know, GT3 RS, just, I don't know, fucking
yeah.
Porsche.
With some really nice double clutch gearbox, not the, you know, torque converter automatic that's
right.
in it.
Just like, this car is meant to go fast.
Yeah.
Just go as fast as it can, and we're going to do everything we can to do that. If it means it has an automatic transmission because it's faster on the Nürburgring, we're going to do it.
Right.
That makes sense. But it's a sports car. It should have a manual.
It should have a manual.
Yeah.
The BMWs have manuals.
Right. That's the weird thing to me.
Yeah. That's why European Auto Group in Texas that does that manual swap, they use BMW components to do it.
Right. It's all factory components.
Yeah. They've even got the BMW shifter assembly to put in.
Right. Yeah. So I still don't understand why they didn't do that. Sports cars need manuals, not because they're faster, but because it's a sports car.
Right. It's about driving pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you're saying, put a double clutch in it to, you know, post your 0-60 time.
Right.
To post your lap time.
Right.
But offer it in a manual because that's what the people who are going to buy this thing actually want.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I don't know. People are just too focused on lap times and numbers.
Right.
And stuff like that things get lost.
Well, and you know, how many people who actually buy these cars are actually going to even take it to the track?
Right.
A lot of these people just want those numbers to brag about as they drive around on the street.
This is true. But that kind of goes back to everybody makes fun of the, 86 BRZ FRS, whatever you want to call it. everybody makes fun of that because it makes no power, blah, blah, blah. Like, everybody argues on the internet that, like, oh, well, the Z is going to kill it. I'm like, Or, they argue that, like, a V6 based Mustang puts up better numbers than it.
Right.
But I guarantee you that V6 based Mustang does not handle and give you the feedback and just the thrill of driving like a 86 does.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the Mustang feels soft.
Yeah. It's a different experience.
Yeah.
The Mustang will feel like a muscle car because that's what it is.
Right.
And this is a sports car.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. The Mustang is a great chassis now. Like,
yeah.
The newer ones that I've driven are fantastic.
Yeah, they can actually corner.
Yeah, I don't have any qualms with it, but it's a different experience.
Right, you don't get the same feedback from the front end.
No,
you
not
know,
at all.
It's not the same kind of pleasure. Honestly, even, I think I've said this before on previous podcasts, even the Hyundai Genesis Coupe.
Yeah.
You know, it felt a lot more like kind of a touring car than a sports car.
And that's what everybody that's, saying, oh, goodbye BRZ with the new Z.
Yeah.
That's what I don't think they understand. Is like, if you've driven a 370Z, they're kind of porkers.
Yeah.
Like, they handle their weight well, but you can tell it's there.
Yeah, it feels like it's resistant to change.
Yeah. Clearly, it's been on this chassis for how many years? Like, the moment they revealed the new Z, back when people were calling it the 400Z.
Yeah.
There was, like, those spy shots of the interior, and I just looked at it, I was like, that's a fucking 370Z interior. The door panels, exactly the same. The seats, exactly the same. The center console, exactly the same. It's like, I guarantee you could take apart, like take a door panel from a 370 and put it on the new Z. Guaranteed 100%.
Which, if that keeps the cost down,
right?
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
You know, because people say it's a tired chassis, but it's a good chassis.
It is a good chassis, but I do think I'm kind of worried this is going to be a little overhyped.
You think once it hits, it's not going to be fun? It's not going to be as nice as people think it's going to be?
I think it's going to be good, but people are doing what they do and hyping it the fuck up.
Yeah.
And this is the second coming of Jesus.
Yeah. that's what YouTube's been saying about this car.
You know, yeah, YouTube's been saying that. No, but none of them have driven it.
Yeah, nobody's driven it yet.
The only time it's even been seen driving is actually around PPIR.
Which, I'm kind of sad I wasn't down there to see that.
I know. I really wish I went to ZCon. So, last weekend was ZCon, which is the biggest meeting of Nissan Z cars anywhere in the country. And Nissan actually brought out the blue prototype to the event.
And that blue is gorgeous.
It's way better than the yellow.
I like the blue. And, I love the Alteca blue in the 370Z. I think that was a gorgeous color. And I said that if I were going to get a new Z, I'd have to get it in blue like this.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that the prototype car came out in this color.
Yeah, it looks so good. Like, I did like the yellow. It's a good throwback color to, you know, the old Zs, even though that yellow was a little different. But man, that blue was just too good.
When the yellow caught your attention, you know, for a concept car, it was a good color.
Yeah, it did what it needed to do.
And I think they are actually doing a like proto Z trim level of this thing.
Would make sense, in, like a launch edition.
Yeah, like in a limited run of in this yellow so that it looks more like the concept. Which is really cool. And of course, you know, it's got gorgeous raised wheels because Nissan never makes a nice car without gorgeous raised wheels.
I just saw a first gen G35 coupe on my way home with those raised wheels that they came with.
They still look great.
It's I remember back then I was like, those wheels are amazing. I love those wheels.
Yeah, they are. I mean, honestly, the 370Z 40th anniversary edition wheels with the gunmetal spokes and the polished lip.
Yeah.
I think maybe the best wheels I've ever seen on a production car.
Okay.
Like, as far as factory wheels are concerned, you know, obviously there's always a great aftermarket option.
Right, yeah.
But with Nissan, you know, Rays makes their wheels. The same company that makes your expensive Volks makes your factory Nissan wheels. And you're getting a great deal right out of the gate. Just don't curb one.
No, because they're really expensive.
Yeah. They are $700 a piece.
Are they that cheap? I was actually expecting more.
Oh, well, that's just... For baseline, like if you have a Maxima,
yeah,
that's about what they cost. I bet these are probably closer to 1,000.
Oh yeah, because like I think my favorite, wheel. Oh man, those rays on the first gen G35 are pretty good, but the first iteration of the 370Z Nismo.
Oh yeah,
had those like I think they were 5 or 6 spoke, and then the spoke kind of split at the end.
Yeah, at the very end,
and they were so deep dished. Like, yeah. That's like the deepest dished factory wheel I think I've ever seen.
Right? That's some serious offset for a factory wheel.
Right?
I mean, the Nissan knows what it's doing when it comes to wheels.
Yes.
You know, you can question what they do otherwise.
There's lots of questions.
But their wheels, they do right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really cool that they brought this car out to PPIR. That was the first time people seen it drive, was going around the oval. I don't know if they did the infield or not. I didn't actually see the video of it. And they had like people with all their old Zs kind of following it and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really cool. And just speaks to how much Nissan knows what the heritage of the Z is.
Yeah. And they know, and they're keeping it. They're keeping, and honestly, the design of this car really says that too.
Right.
You know, you've got a throwback to the 60s on the front end. You've got a throwback to the 90s on the back end.
Yep.
You know, they tried to make a greatest hits Z.
They did.
Which, if this really is, and it's likely that this is the last gasoline-powered Z, this is a good send-off.
Right.
You know, at least aesthetically from what I'm seeing, you know, when I drive one, my opinion may change.
I mean, 400 horsepower is going to be hard to argue with.
Be hard to disappoint you.
Because, I mean, the 370 makes, what, 310, 320 horsepower.
I think it was like 330 and they increased it incrementally throughout its life cycle.
Does it make close to 340 now?
I think it's around 350 now.
Oh, okay. That's doing pretty good then.
Yeah. But you know, it was just the incremental increases, you know, throughout the life, which means that this thing could potentially see close to a 500 horsepower model by the end of its life cycle.
I mean, if Nissan doesn't do it, the aftermarket will.
Oh yeah,
because this is the same engine as the Q60 Infiniti, Q50. I don't fucking know. Infiniti.
Yeah, the VR30.
Fix your fucking naming game.
Oh man, luxury cars in general.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a VR30
DDTT.
DDTT.
Yeah.
But what is it? AMS has an alpha package for that, putting up to like 700 horsepower.
Really, on factory internals?
I think so. I'm pretty sure.
That's impressive, because I was thinking, I remember the they were saying what the old VG30 from the 90s could do 600 on factory internals.
Yeah.
So if this thing can do 700 horsepower,
right?
Tire shredding to the rear wheels through a manual transmission.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, that would be awesome. And, you know, I've heard the Supra is actually doing really well in the aftermarket as well. And they're, you know, kind of continuing the tradition of the old Supra where they lie and say that it has less horsepower than it actually has.
Yeah, I have heard that, because people were making fun of comparing the Z to the Supra. And, like, the Supra only makes, like, 300.
Yeah, it's like 380 something?
I don't remember.
But I've seen people take new Supras and dyno them and they're putting out over 400.
Yeah, I believe it. Toyota likes to downplay their power like that.
Yeah, which what I'm interested in is, since Toyota lied and Nissan was being honest, what is the insurance effect going to be? Is it going to be cheaper to insure a new Supra because it's, you know, technically below 400, even though it makes more, and Nissan's saying it's that the Z is going to make 400?
You know, I think back in the day, there was an argument to be had there, but I'm pretty sure insurance companies are just way too smart these days.
And they'll just figure it out.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they have algorithms just scouring the internet trying to figure out how many crashes happen per second. Like, you know,
I've heard the WRX is the most expensive car to insure in America because of the property damage that's associated with
it. Yeah, you were telling me that before. Not because they crash them particularly, but because when they crash them, they do a lot of property damage.
And, you know, because as a teenager who drove it through a fence.
Right. Oh, man. But yeah, and I was also happy to see when they unveiled this at the live stream that it's just the proto. Like, they've really made... I was curious what changes they're going to make. The grill in the gaping maw is a little different.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I think that pretty much the changes they made were probably just to satisfy the DOT.
Yeah. This is kind of showing the yellow proto next to the production blue. And there's not really any difference.
And, you know, I was really worried that they were going to add that kind of chrome crossbar crash bumper, the one that everyone deleted on the old Zs.
Right.
I'm really glad they didn't do that.
Well, that's what people don't realize, because people were kind of complaining about the squared off mouth.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, yeah, you look at a 240Z where you take the bumper off.
Right, which is what everyone who hot rods a 240Z does.
Right. And you get that, like, this picture shows the chrome grill, but yeah, you take that off, it's just a big square.
Yeah, which is the fashion
right
these days.
So, yeah, we'll see exactly how much this car lights the world on fire when it comes out, which isn't too far from now, 2022,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, which they said, well, it's now been pushed to a 2023 model year, right?
Has it?
I think, yeah, now they're saying, because originally with the Proto, they said it was going to be 2022. And
it is 2023.
Yep, with the chip shortage, and Nissan has two or three models that are in line to be released before this.
Okay.
They have the new Pathfinder, which gets rid of the CVT transmission.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, because
I've not been paying attention to the Pathfinder, because once they made that bullshit thing, right, I was like, well, Pathfinders are dead to me.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, that bulletproof, reliable thing, you just gave it the worst Achilles heel you possibly could.
Right.
Yeah, but the new one...
You took my off-roading capable, like, rock-solid SUV and made it into a minivan?
Right, made it into a minivan with a transmission that won't last 30,000 miles.
Yeah, I didn't understand that.
But yeah, the new ad for the Pathfinder is actually great. It shows, like, a father and son off-roading in a 90s Pathfinder.
Okay.
And then it cuts, and, you know, the son is now the father, and they're in the new Pathfinder.
Okay.
Hitting the same trail.
Well, hopefully it does better. Hopefully they learn their lesson from that.
Which I love that Nissan's, you know, recognize that everyone loved Nissan in the 90s. And
right,
interest started to taper off with some of this new technology that made them a little less reliable.
Well, I think Nissan realized that Renault was having too much of an influence on them.
Oh, so you think this is like, hey, Charles Ghosn's gone now.
Yeah, I think it's like the Japanese are taking Nissan back over and going back to what worked.
Right.
You know, which Nissan was never, it was never a Honda or a Toyota. Yeah. It wasn't you didn't see as many Nissans, but right, the people that bought Nissans loved them.
They were diehard fans.
Yes.
Yeah, there's so many people with 20-year-old Xterras that are just keeping them running.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I had in the shop for the day job, I just put catalytic converters on a 98 Frontier.
Catalytic converters?
Yeah.
So and these are CARB certified cats. So
yeah,
that's easily worth more than the truck.
Right, yeah. But he loved the truck, and we are doing rear leaf springs in a 2002 Xterra.
Yeah.
Each one, like, that Frontier had 273,000 miles on it, and the Xterra had, like, 198.
Man, that's actually kind of impressive that the Xterra only has 198.
It's kind of impressive that those 3.3s are still going. Like, so many people just, like, forgot to do timing belts on those old VG motors and blew them up.
Yeah.
It's amazing they're still going.
There's some people who baby them, keep them running forever.
Right.
And I hope that the new Nissans will be up to that standard.
Yeah.
You know, it's because they could be.
Yeah, there's really no reason they can't be.
Yeah. I mean, everybody of any fan of the show knows I love my old Nissan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, me with my limited mechanical knowledge, I've been able to keep that thing running.
Right.
You know, it's not bulletproof, but it's easy to fix and it doesn't break very often.
Yeah. I mean, the old ones were pretty damn reliable. And I just always hate it because Nissan has still been leading the way in a lot of innovation stuff.
Yeah.
And they're still getting left behind somehow.
Yeah. You know, they led the way in the CVT thing. And they ended up kind of eating the cost of that progress, really.
Right.
You know, they're known for shitty transmissions now.
Yeah.
And even though everybody else is using CVTs now, you know, Nissan's the one that takes the blame for it.
Yeah.
You know, they did the radar-guided cruise control in the Infinities.
Yeah.
And, you know, they kind of started pioneering this kind of piecemeal self-driving that we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, you could get an Altima with, like, pretty much the lane keep assist, your Tesla autopilot kind of thing.
Yeah.
You could get an Altima with that before Subaru was doing it.
Yeah.
You can get an Altima with a variable compression ratio engine and nobody seems to give a shit.
No one is talking about that.
Right.
That's game changing technology.
Yeah.
They literally can change the stroke of your engine. They can change the displacement per cylinder to give you better gas mileage.
Right.
Like, that's wild.
Yeah, and like nobody talks about this stuff.
And you know what's going to happen is they're going to perfect it. And they're going to be the first ones to do it, so it's not going to be reliable,
right?
And then when you know, when Honda and Subaru decide, "Hey, let's try that technology out," they're going to be the ones that kind of profit from that innovation.
Right. To be fair though, apparently the Subaru CVTs are also garbage.
Well, they're telling people they can tow with them.
Yeah, that too. They're starting to see more I'm starting to see more and more evidence of those things breaking chains and stuff. But
that's sad for Subaru.
Yeah, but yeah, that's really sad because there's a lot of cool Subarus right now that there's WRXs.
Yep, with
CVTs.
Yeah, and I've literally heard salesmen try to sell people on it because if you get the CVT model, you can get all those self-driving features, the Subaru iDrive features.
Well, that's the reason. Like, that's going to be the death of manuals before anything else.
Yeah,
like. Demand aside, which demand is low, don't get me wrong, the fact that all these safety features and self-driving features and stuff are coming around, that's going to be the real death of the manual.
Yeah, because that's going to be where it meets its regulatory end.
Right.
When it's illegal to manufacture a manual.
Yeah. I just saw an article. It wasn't by an auto like site. It was by some like newspaper site.
Okay.
But they were actually like complaining pretty much about how few features you could get on a new BRZ. Like this, they were like pretty much like, they're like, this is why you can't get like, they were giving it like docking points for it not having lane keep assist and auto braking and all these other nanny assists.
You're supposed to drive that thing yourself.
Right.
That's what it's for.
But like, that's what I mean is like the general populace is losing the point at this. Like,
they're, right.
They don't understand. They don't understand our weirdness.
Yeah, they don't understand our headspace going into this. It's like, no, I want to drive my car. It's like, oh, cars that drive themselves, that's cool. It keeps all these people from slamming into stuff.
Right.
But, you know, commuting through Denver, I just started a new job in Commerce City. And 3 out of my 4 days in my commute so far, there's been a wreck on 25.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm surprised it's only been 3 out of 5.
Yeah. So
3 out of 4.
Yeah, so far, 3 out of 4. One of those was a semi-truck that was more demolished than I've ever seen a semi-truck on the side of the road.
Okay. Quick rant. That pissed me off because I go from Hamden south on 25.
Yeah, so you saw that wreck.
Yeah, and traffic was slow going south.
On the other side.
Until you got past the wreck.
Just because they were rubbernecking.
Yeah, just because of fucking people slowing down to see the fucking semi-truck on its side. And traffic was backed up like all the way to freaking Denver.
Holy shit, all the way up.
Yeah, because of fucking rubberneckers looking at that semi-truck.
To be fair, did you see how messed up that thing was?
Yeah, it got pretty good.
I've never seen, like, the cowling was gone, the front suspension was completely destroyed. Well, I saw a portion of it on one tow truck while the semi was still on the road.
Well, they said part of the reason they had such, like, it was backed up for so long is because the truck had no wheels. So they had to like drag it up onto these flatbeds and shit.
Yeah, when I drove by, there was a flatbed truck that was parked there, which was also creating a traffic jam.
Right.
Just so they could haul this thing away. Like, they had a tow truck that just had the rear portion that hooks up on the semi on the back of the tow truck, and it was full. It couldn't carry anything else.
Yeah, but That pissed me off because I'm like, I'm going south. I shouldn't be affected by this, but here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what rubbernecking will do for you.
Right. So I don't remember what we were just talking about, but since I'm on a rant already.
This is a very rant-worthy topic.
It's a very rant-worthy topic. I was excited about this car.
Yes.
The Kona N.
Yeah.
I was excited. I was like, this is going to be possibly like the perfect daily.
Like, yeah, especially for our area.
Especially for our area. It's an SUV, but it's small.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like a lifted hot hatch.
Yeah, it's a crossover.
Yeah. But it has 300 horsepower. It has an 8-speed double clutch transmission or 7-speed. I don't know. It's a double clutch, though.
Like, yeah.
I was like, you know what? It's a hot hatch that I could use year round and not feel bad about it.
Yeah.
And then they made it front wheel drive only.
Which, you know, performance aside, you know, any crossover on its top trim should be all-wheel drive.
Yes.
Because you're losing the point of the crossover otherwise.
Right. What is... buy a Veloster.
Right. All it is a lifted hatchback if there's no power to the rear wheels.
Right.
It's a front-wheel drive. You're right. Just buy a hatchback. It's like if you needed the ground clearance, then you need more than front-wheel drive.
Right.
And yeah, the fact that they would make any crossover, which I understand base models, you know, you want a cheaper entry-level version.
Yeah, that's fine, whatever.
This is the N. This is the sport one.
Yeah.
And it only comes with front-wheel drive?
The fact that you can get an Elantra N or a Veloster N with that same engine, but then what's the point of the... Like, I get it. The Veloster is the sportier one, the sport hatchback.
Right.
The Elantra is your sedan daily driver.
Right. A little bit more mature.
A little bit more space. And this was supposed to be the, you know, all-weather Colorado, like...
Right.
Places that get seasons car.
Right. This was supposed to be a reason not to buy a Nissan Rogue.
Yeah.
And sadly, now you're better off buying a broken CVT Nissan Rogue.
I mean, this was the reason not to buy a Porsche... Was it the Macan?
Oh, yeah, the little baby Porsches. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, with that much power.
Right.
Yeah.
And being front-wheel drive only it ruins it for me. I get it. You could still drive that year-round. You could put snow tires on it. It would do okay.
But you could say the same thing for a Veloster.
I can do the same thing with my Fiesta ST.
Yeah. You drive it all year-round. You just put snow tires
on it. Yeah, I go up in the mountains. I go skiing with that thing.
Yeah.
You know? The point was I wanted to go dirt roading and whipping the tail out and like drifting in snow and
not have to worry about getting snow tires. Just have all seasons
or
and keep it that way.
Put snow tires on it and be completely undefeatable.
Right. Yeah. Just, like, I'm gonna drive this up the side of a mountain.
Right. Yeah. And I'm just like, Hyundai says they didn't do it because they didn't want the cost of the vehicle to go up too much.
Make it a trim.
Yeah.
Make it a trim.
Yeah, just like, make it optional then and see what happens.
Right. Even if you have, you know, a Veloster in all-wheel drive versus a front, you've got to offer it or you don't have a crossover.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it. I guess it is a good car. It is fun. It's lively. You know, it's mature. You know, the journalists seem to like it, but...
But they're driving on dry pavement.
Exactly. They're not doing back road, dirt roads. They're just driving around a city on pavement. Yeah, that's going to be fine.
Yeah. Front-wheel drive's fine for that.
Right. I like front-wheel drive. Like, that's the thing. I like front-wheel drive.
Yeah.
I'm not a front-wheel drive hater, although driving your BRZ did make me kind of question my lifestyle. But no, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to go out and buy a, whatever this is, $35,000, $40,000, you know, hot hatch SUV thing right now.
You might have bought a used one,
right?
If they had an all-wheel drive version,
right? And now I'm just, this car doesn't exist to me anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe if they could become really, really, really cheap in the future, but
you know, it probably will. Hyundais don't tend to hold their value very well.
This is true. And of all the Veloster N, I think might hold its value pretty well.
Yeah,
but this one probably won't.
Yeah, I mean, because it's only front-wheel drive, it loses all of its utility.
Yeah.
And I don't see the point of buying it just for the ground clearance.
No, I don't get it either.
Yeah, like if you need ground clearance to get over stuff,
then you need all-wheel drive.
Exactly.
If you're bottoming out, you're pretty much screwed already.
Yeah.
You know, I just I don't get it. I wanted it so bad. And Hyundai, you ruined it for me. And it's such a good looking car, too. I love the way that looks,
and
actually.
I hate when that happens. When there's a car you've been looking forward to for so long.
Right.
You know, for me, it was the Alfa Romeo 4C.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, here we go. Turbocharged, mid-engined, four-cylinder, made by an Italian company. It's going to be passionate, you know? And then it comes out with a double-clutch gearbox made by Ferrari.
Yeah.
They didn't put power steering in it so that they could save weight, and they only offer it with a double-clutch Ferrari gearbox.
Right.
What happens when your budget at, you know, Alfa breaks, or your transmission breaks? You've got a Ferrari part you have to fix.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a grand disappointment. And, you know, don't even get me started on the Supra being only automatic.
Oh, I mean, I think we already covered that.
Yeah, I think we've covered that this episode and every other.
Yeah, there's some reoccurring rants that we go on here. But to get away from the rants, I want to talk about some things happening in racing real quick before we go to break. Because there's some fun stuff happening in the pro scene of racing, and some not fun stuff. We'll start with the not fun stuff. The Japanese Grand Prix of Formula One has been canceled because of COVID reasons.
And, you know, it's sad to see this happen. I really hope that we can move past this, you know, as a planet.
Right.
It seems like there's a lot of people who would rather keep us in the past.
Right.
Or refuse to acknowledge that there's even a problem.
Yeah, there's no problem. Science isn't real.
Yeah. But it's sad. I mean, and, you know, Japan takes this very seriously. That's why there weren't spectators at the Tokyo Olympics.
Mm-hmm. And I think I'm kind of sad that the Olympics actually happened, because I think the reason the Grand Prix has been canceled is because of the Olympics and how the numbers of COVID, everything shot up in Japan as soon as they let foreigners in, basically.
Yeah, and they didn't even let foreign spectators in. It was right. Just the athletes.
It was just the athletes and coaches and all that.
Yeah.
So, it does suck that this season Formula One is still getting affected by COVID and we're still having races canceled, but I completely understand, and I hope, you know, the Japanese people and everything recover from COVID quickly. They take this way more seriously than we do in America in general, so I'm hoping,
as they should,
right?
You know, it's honestly, I've never been more envious of tiny island countries.
Right. Oh, man. I was looking up New Zealand's immigration policy.
Yeah.
It's strict.
Even before COVID, you know, you had to be young and kind of wealthy already and ready to bring that wealth into New Zealand.
Right. So moving on from the sad news, exciting news. Cadillac is going back to prototype racing.
That is cool.
So some of you may remember from like video games and stuff, there was like the Cadillac LMP cars.
Yeah.
Actually, they might still be doing LMP in America here. I don't know if they actually are. Hey, it's Matt bumping in here real quick to say I was wrong. So Cadillac has been doing prototype racing. They haven't been at the official 24 hours of Le Mans. That's what got me confused there. And with the Hypercar series, they're returning to the official Le Mans race. Sorry, just need to make that little correction. Make myself look like slightly less of an idiot. I don't follow prototype racing as much. 2018, so they did win the 2018 champion.
They jumped from 2002 to 2018, though.
Uh-huh. So, but they're going to be doing the LMDH, which is the... And also that render is just insanity.
Yeah, that's a lot of angles.
Right, so it's the hypercar class they came up with, which is... The original idea of the hypercar class, as far as I can tell, was it was supposed to be a homologation special class.
Okay.
You had to make road-going versions of these cars.
Okay, you had to make a certain amount of production models.
Right. But then not enough two manufacturers signed up for that. So like, well, we'll also combine it with regular prototype racing that you don't have to build road cars for.
So are they different classes on the track at the same time?
No, they're kind of the same class now. It's a giant mess. Like, I tried reading into this and it is a mess. So Cadillac though is entering this class. I don't know if there's any word on road going versions of this though.
Okay.
So Toyota was supposed to be in this class and they were going to make a road going version of their car, their GR Sport, whatever.
Okay.
But apparently that crashed and burnt down in a really bad fire couple months ago, and they either did or didn't there's been conflicting reports that they're just going to cancel the entire program.
Oh no, from one crash.
Yeah. I guess they were like, well, this isn't safe for roads.
Well, you can trust Toyota to just, oh, nope, this isn't a completely developed concept. No, we're not going to release this and put our name on it.
Right. But it seems like Cadillac is throwing their hat into this weird class of racing. And hey, that's really cool. And I guess I was wrong. I did say on here Cadillac back to racing prototype cars. They have been racing prototype cars this whole time. I'm just out of the loop. This thing, though, is just, I hope this becomes a road-going version. I hope it looks exactly like this prototype image.
I hope they make more than four of them.
Right? Because this thing, it's just the most futuristic-looking thing.
Yeah, that looks really cool. I want to see what the front looks like. But yeah, that is in a very angled, very angry looking car.
Right.
Can you imagine trying to park that?
Oh, cameras everywhere. That's the only way to do it at this point. I think part of the rule set is you can't have a rear wing.
Oh.
Because the, I think it's a Peugeot that just came out in this class of all people.
Yeah.
But it didn't have a rear wing, and it looks like a prototype car without the wing, and it's kind of goofy looking.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's an interesting class. I think I'm going to do a video for the YouTube channel going over this class of racing, just because it is very convoluted. The story behind it's really weird, and the rule set's weird now, and the fact that it was supposed to be homologation specials is very interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those have produced some of the neatest cars throughout history.
Right.
I mean, you've got the, you know, Ford GTs from the 60s.
Yeah,
you know, sitting in billionaires' garages.
Well, yeah. But even just like, you know, Audi S1s, Quattros and shit like that, you know, or yeah. Your Lancia.
Oh, yeah, the Delta Integrales.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
the Rally, I think, produced the best homologation specials, including the RSGR.
Ooh.
Which the RSGR is a homologation special. And possibly for the 2022 or 2023 season, they're actually testing out a hybrid system on this.
Interesting. So how is that going to factor into WRC's rule set, I wonder?
I don't know. I haven't looked into it. I just saw this video pop up on YouTube, and I wanted to mention it because the car looks amazing, even in the camo. Like, just all the aero on it, the giant fender flares. You know, it's definitely still a WRC car. And I'll insert some noise right here. The thing sounds amazing still. I don't know if you've actually heard it yet.
I haven't.
There, you need to hear it too. So
that sounds angry even for a WRC car.
Right?
And that's with the hybrid system installed?
That's with the hybrid system. So however they're doing the hybrid system, it's still, you know, it's still mainly petrol powered.
I love seeing something run around a dirt track with the camo on it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, we can't risk spying eyes, but we're going to release this for our press release.
Which clearly there were spying eyes, because this is from a channel, RFP Production, which I think just does these kind of videos.
Now, that would be neat, just like camp out somewhere. It's like, I heard Toyota's going to be up here.
Right. And then to see this thing just flying by you in the woods.
See, what I think is interesting is if this hybrid system proves to be a clear advantage, then like other things in WRC, like when Audi introduced all-wheel drive, it could be a game changer for the whole sport.
Right.
You know, because that's what happens. If somebody does something that, you know, can't be beaten, you know, or very rarely is beaten, you know, just I think there was a rear-wheel drive Lancia that did beat the Audi Quattro once.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Audi Quattro wasn't completely, you know, unbeatable.
Right. But
it was very rare that it was.
Yeah, it did set a new standard.
Yes.
And it's possible that this new hybrid system could do the same.
Yeah, and I'm actually excited because that might mean we get another generation of the RSGR with a crazy hybrid system.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That would be really cool. I mean, it only runs on a three-cylinder.
Yeah, and if you have some electric torque to help you get off the line.
Right.
Especially if you've got all four wheels giving you grip.
Yeah. some extra boost from an electric motor. Like, yeah. I think that could work.
And, you know, at that point, I'd be fine if the gasoline motor's just there for the sound.
Right. But, like, that's... That gives me hope for, like, the hot hatch future.
Yeah.
You know, like, we can... I've been saying, we can do electric or hybrid hot hatches.
Yeah. I mean, they've always been the utility of the sports car world.
Right.
You know, it's like, want a sports car, but you still need to do stuff.
And you still want to get good gas mileage. And,
yeah.
You know, you still got to drive this every day.
Yeah. Yeah, but you have fun.
Right.
You know?
So, and I mean, if anybody... It also gives me some... excitement for Toyota with their hybrid systems, because actually Toyota is kind of lagging behind right now as far as electrification and hybrid systems go. Like, they were in the lead,
yeah,
but they kind of, you know, stagnated for a while. They're still using the same systems they were.
I mean, Toyota's sales numbers are just so good.
Why fuck with it?
Yeah, the incentive is just, it's not there to innovate.
Right.
You know, when I was selling Subarus, I remember just people being blown away by the technology and like an Ascent,
yeah,
or a Legacy, and they'd just been at the Toyota dealer.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were already miffed because the Toyota salesmen behave as if they have no competition. Because
they don't.
You know, until they go, but until your perspective buyee goes to me and I sell you an Ascent.
Yeah.
You know, and it may not be as reliable. It isn't as reliable, especially because it's a CVT.
Right.
But... That attitude's kind of off-putting.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it seems like that's the attitude that's being applied to their engineering.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they figured it out in, like, the 90s, and they just kind of been riding that since.
Yeah.
But nobody right now is really doing, besides hypercars, is really doing performance hybrid.
Yeah, yeah, the hypercars have really been kind of dominating that market, which it's that kind of set a new standard. Now,
right.
Now it's really hard to build a hypercar without an electric drivetrain.
It kind of is at this point. So I would like to see Toyota come back to dominating the electrification hybrid game and come out with a hot hatch Yaris GR with a hybrid system. They could even do it, honestly, I wouldn't mind if they did it like they do the Highlander hybrids, where it's a front-wheel drive gasoline engine and an electric motor in the back.
See, that seems like an efficient way to do things.
Right? Because then you're not adding too much weight because you're getting rid of an all-wheel drive system already.
Right.
So you can still keep it about the same. You still get your all-wheel drive set up.
Right.
I could see it working.
You don't need the rear drive shaft. You don't need a transfer case.
Right.
Yeah, you're eliminating a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see what they do. We'll see if... you know, if Toyota even decides to do this hybrid stuff in WRC, this is just testing. So they could decide to say, man, screw that. But that car looked fast. So,
and I hope the FIA lets them do it.
Yeah.
You know, that I think will be the hiccup.
Yeah. And yeah, Gazoo Racing, ever since Toyota took them on, has definitely been pumping some excitement into that brand.
They've got some cool stuff, don't they?
Right.
I mean, that rear wheel drive Toyota that Ryan Turk drifts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What is that? A Corolla hatch?
Yeah, I think that was before Gazoo Racing got involved. He's been doing rear-wheel drive Corolla stuff for a while now.
But now he's got the GR logo all
over
it.
Yeah, of course. Now, if they just bring over the Yaris to America... No, I'm not going to go on that rant again, I swear. Actually, we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about all sorts of dumb shit.
Well, at least we're keeping our tradition. We are consistent, if nothing else.
Talking dumb shit. All right, we'll be back in a few. I'm sure you're glad you don't have to deal with the fucking dealership life anymore.
Dude, definitely. It's cool to do the enthusiast thing.
Yeah.
That's why we're here.
Right.
You know, that's the fast Hondas are the reason I'm sitting here right now.
I mean, same, because that's fast Hondas are what got me into this. I never owned one, but just the whole, like, you can do what with what now?
Yeah, like that's a Civic. That's a little grocery getter.
Right. Well,
you're going to go rob semi trucks with it?
Right. Well, where I grew up, like, I didn't know what a Civic was until like Fast and Furious came out and I started reading all the tuner magazines and stuff. Like,
everybody had the domestics.
Yeah, we didn't have Honda Civics around there.
Yeah, you were in Michigan, where it's like that's...
We were outside Detroit, you know? Like, you didn't buy those cars.
It's like, yeah, somebody's gonna put some shit in your gas tank
right.
in that car. Like, you're taking food out of their mouths.
Right. Even though, I mean, GM was just garbage then still, but...
And then the government had to bail it out.
Right. Even though I'm at the point now in my life where I want the cars I wanted in high school. you know?
Yeah.
So it's like a Chevy Beretta GTZ. I want one. Well, you saw the video.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, what? That was a Cavalier, I think. But it was still.
The Cavalier.
C24.
Yeah. I remember it was a Z, but I can't remember the numbers that GM assigned it.
Yeah, because they make no sense.
Z24, Z71 for the trucks.
Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah. It's like, where did this number come from?
Well, like, it almost made sense because, like, it started the Cavalier Z24 was a 2.4 liter.
Okay.
The Lumina Z34 was a 3.4 liter.
But the Z28 is a 5.7 liter.
Right. I'm not sure where that one came from. And the Z71, doesn't make any sense either. And also, you can get a Z28 or Z24 Cavalier with a 3.1 liter V6. So, I don't fucking know anymore.
At least with Dodge, like the SRT and then the number is the number of cylinders.
Right. That made sense.
Yeah. Like that.
I wouldn't mind a Chrysler Crossfire
SRT6. Yeah.
A supercharged Mercedes engine.
Supercharged?
Yeah, it was a supercharged Mercedes engine.
Oh, shit. That would have been baller.
Right?
Manual transmission, rear-wheel drive.
Yeah, they make like 300 horsepower.
Yeah. That would actually be pretty fucking fun.
Right? The interior ergonomics of those cars is the worst I've ever encountered, but just gut it and make it into a race car. It's fine.
So, like, just the GM plastics or where everything is?
Well, it was Chrysler, but everything was, like, squared off.
Oh. So it just had, like, angles?
Yeah, like, I remember the thing that sucked the most is the center console stack with the radio and HVAC and stuff.
Yeah.
Had this little corner where your knee would normally rest, and just, like, this sharp corner is exactly where your knee wanted to rest. I'm just like, this is terrible. Yeah, it just keeps poking you.
It'd be funny if that's like the mod everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
It's like put foam around that one.
Yeah. God, I wonder what a fucking Chrysler Crossfire owners club looks like.
I don't know. Is it more of a support group?
It's got to just be old men.
I've only ever seen old men and college age girls drive Chrysler Crossfires.
Yeah. I remember when it came out, though, everybody was all crazy, like, around where I was anyways, crazy for it because the wing lifted up when you got up to speed.
Yeah.
And we had never seen anything like that before, you know?
Yeah, it was, like, outside of a Porsche.
Right.
Yeah.
And nobody knew what a Porsche even was. We called them Porsches.
Yeah, Porsche.
Oh, that's a nice Porsche.
Porsche.
It's a Porsche, thank you.
It's a Porsche. Porsche.
Right? I used to think that was pretentious, and now I can't say it any other way.
I mean, there's an E at the end.
Yeah. Well, whatever. That's the way it's said, so it's the way it is.
Yeah, well, there's an E at the end. It's like, yeah, because I used to say Porsche, too, because that's, I mean, even back in the day, that's what all the movies called them and everything.
Right.
But now, it's like colloquially, it's moving to Porsche.
Yeah. There was probably a really big push for it.
Yeah, Porsche probably wanted it.
Right. Well, it's like when Hyundai did their Super Bowl ads. On how to pronounce Hyundai.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, it's Hyundai. Like Sunday.
Like Sunday.
Hyundai?
Hyundai.
Hyundai?
Yeah.
No. Hyundai.
Hyundai.
Hyundai. Yeah, I just remember that because I was like, oh, it's Hyundai. Like Sunday. That makes sense. Yeah. Thank you, Hyundai.
That's the best way to put that.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, if you can't figure it out from that, I don't know. Or there's people that say Nissan.
I say that just to fuck
which I guess is
sometimes.
Mostly just a British thing.
Yeah, Nissan, which Nissan. Is funny because there's an aftermarket company called Nissan.
Yeah,
Nissen.
Yeah, Nissans. Yeah,
that was my last ditch attempt to get radiators for BMWs when I couldn't find them at Aspen. It would be a Nissan. That was like the last BMW radiator I could get my hands on.
Yeah, Nissan is kind of hit or miss for parts quality.
Yeah, and then you know half the time it was the fitment was wrong. Like, or the ports were in the wrong place, or it had ports that it didn't need.
Right. I'm trying to remember, I'm sitting here, speaking of, like, mispronouncing car names, what did Chris always used to say Jaguar?
There weren't enough Jags when it came into Aspen for me to even remember.
Jaguar. That's how he said it.
Jaguar?
Yeah. I was like, is that, so J-A-G-W-I-R-E? Jaguar?
Jaguar.
It's a Jaguar.
Jaguar.
I'm like, where are you getting this I in this fucking name? Jaguar.
Jaguar. That's what they should call their electric one.
Of course, I always like weirdly pronounce Toyota.
How do you say it?
Like, I did it right there because I'm thinking about it. If I don't think about it, it's like Toyota. Toyota. Kind of, just kind of like
you hit a D at the. You know, when I'm thinking about it with the podcast, you hit the T becomes a D.
Yeah,
Toyota, like Yoda.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I'm just thinking of the founder of Toyota.
Yeah. Yoda.
Toyota. Yeah, like a toy Yoda. That's how I... Yeah,
like exactly. A toy Yoda.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's. I don't know how I ever got started on that. It's a Midwest thing, I think.
Well, it's funny because have you seen all the people who do that out here? They just leave the toy and then they put a little Yoda head?
Yep. there was an article. This was an old, like, 4chan thing that went around. Who knows if it's actually fucking real. Like, back when memes were in their, like, infancy.
Yeah.
About, I think it was a Hooters restaurant was doing a giveaway, and the grand prize was a Toyota.
Okay.
And it was a toy Yoda.
Aw.
And the girl was really pissed, and she was suing Hooters.
She actually sued him?
That's what the fucking meme said. Who fucking knows?
That's fucking hilarious. I could see that happening.
She was very not happy in the picture.
Yeah. I thought I was getting a Prius.
Right? I got a toy Yoda.
They were saying, Jake was saying something about the Priuses and the new Yaris's having carbon fiber roofs on the production models.
Oh yeah, I did see he posted a picture on that. The Yaris GR.
Is that what the texture looks like?
Yeah. So the forged carbon Lamborghini started this with their wings and stuff like that. It's basically like a bunch of chunks of carbon, and they put it in a mold and inject epoxy or the resin into it.
Oh, shit.
Instead of laying it.
So they don't have to weave it.
Yeah.
So that's a lower cost to produce it.
Well, it's Lamborghini, so it costs a lot of money.
Potentially lower
cost. It's supposed to be stronger because you have fibers going each and every direction instead of one grain each way.
Yeah.
Where you can have snap points.
Yeah.
This is just completely random. It's like plywood.
Oh, okay. Which plywood?
Or not plywood, OSB. That's what I'm thinking
of. What's OSB?
OSB is actually what they make homes out of. They don't actually use plywood. And it's just that. It's a bunch of oriented strand board. It's just a bunch of chunks of...
Oh, like fiberboard.
Kind of. But yeah, like this, like most flooring is made out of this.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just like they put trees through shredders and then just epoxy them back together into panels.
Because they've got going in every direction, it's strong in every direction. That is cool. And I could see how that would have the potential if you don't need to loom it. That seems like if a company figured out a production process, it could potentially be cheaper.
Right. Yeah, I'm surprised we don't see more forged carbon stuff out there, honestly.
When did Lamborghini start doing it?
With the Aventador.
Okay, so like 5 to 10 years ago.
How long has the fucking Aventador been out?
I mean,
it's a long ass time.
Yeah, the Aventador, because the Murcielago died, what, in the early 2000s? And the Aventador replaced it. And Lamborghinis are supposed to only have a 10-year production run, but I know that the Murcielago exceeded that. And now I think the Aventador may have too.
Okay.
Because they try to keep them on, they only make two models at a time and then do the 10-year production schedule. A baby Lambo and a high-end Lambo.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time before we'll stop seeing the V12s altogether.
Oh, yeah. They're going to go full electric here soon.
Yeah, this is probably the proto for that that Diablo.
Or right.
Or the Countach.
Right.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's hybrid now, so.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see if they can make that exciting. But, yeah, so forged carbon fiber roof and that aluminum hatch, aluminum hood, aluminum doors.
Like, everything's super lightweight.
Yeah. This car is so much more than just like a Yaris with a cool engine. I think I think I told you before, there's some ridiculous thing where it's like it only shares like 10% of the parts with a regular Yaris.
Which is crazy because it looks so similar.
Right?
Like they just shaped it into the same shape, but it's a completely different components putting it up. What?
That's just a
I hope
render,
they...
but...
I hope they don't make that.
No, don't do it. It looks like a fucking... Like, they took this line from a Murano Cross
Crabby. Yeah, Rye. I was just thinking, which is easily the ugliest convertible ever made.
Yes, I do want to drive one.
The Cross Cab Muranos?
Yeah. I want to drive one with a top down. I just want to see what it's like.
I think it'd be fun to ride in the back seat.
Yeah.
Because there's just so... Like, it looks like there's just... You've got a lounge you're driving.
Yeah.
Like, I saw one drive by the other day. I'm like, And people in the back seem like they have like a ton of room in the back,
like
for a convertible.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not like coming around on the Cross Cabriolet, but like I kind of understand a very specific niche audience that would want that.
Which I heard somebody told me, and I don't know how true this is, that that was made for some high-ranking Nissan exec's wife.
Yeah, it was made for Gozen's wife.
Of course, that's a fucking Gozen thing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm going to make you make this hideous thing for my wife, and then I'm going to smuggle myself out after, because he was embezzling money the whole fucking time.
Which he still swears up and down he wasn't doing.
Yeah, but he says he was just doing what he should have done to get fair pay. Which, did you see Planet Money did an episode on him?
Yeah, I listened to that. Yeah.
It's fucking wild. And because he's still, what is he, in Lebanon?
Lebanon, yeah.
He's just, he's in Lebanon, a
right?
quote unquote free man.
I mean, yeah, because he's like, they were setting me up because they were, their sales were bad. So they were setting me up so that way they had a scapegoat.
Yeah.
They didn't like the foreigner. And like, I'm like,
you didn't declare 90% of your income.
I'm like, I can, you're making a good case.
Yeah.
If we didn't know you were like embezzling, actually know you were embezzling.
There wasn't just mountains of evidence. Right. Like, you're making a great point.
Because yes, the Japanese do not like foreigners, and they did not like Renault coming in, you know, taking over Nissan.
Yeah, yeah. And
I don't like Renault taking over Nissan.
I love that fucking metaphor from that Planet Money podcast. And it's like, sending a Frenchman to Japan to tell him how to make cars is like sending a Japanese person to France to tell him how to make baguettes.
Yeah, it really is. Like, France made the worst cars.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even have most of them.
Renault made what is possibly the worst car. The Le Car.
It's called Le Car. Yeah. French for the car.
Yeah. This thing. They actually sold these in America for a short time. They're just like, they were the worst reliable, just cheapest, shittiest fucking things.
Which is funny because, so there's a market for cars like this in Paris. Because in Paris, you can't drive or park on the street without getting bashed into.
Right.
Like, people just parallel park, like, going slam, slam, and they get out of their car. Like,
whatever, I'm parked.
Like, when the Arc de Triomphe was a public road, like, there were so many accidents on it that if you rented a car, you rented a car in Europe, you had to check a box that said you wouldn't drive around the Arc de Triomphe, and you wouldn't take it to Italy.
That's amazing.
The gas goes slowly. The car doesn't.
Yes, it does. I think this thing, yeah, it was Renault 5, I think, in
America.
Or in Europe, but I'm pretty sure it was Le Car here.
Oh, there was a turbo with a whopping 110 to 160 horsepower.
Okay.
35 horsepower?
35 to 94 horsepower.
That's like if you get to a hill and you're full of passengers, like, okay, two of you have to get out.
Right.
Or we're not going to get up this hill.
35. So my mom was telling me, speaking of low power cars, apparently when she was a kid, my grandpa and grandma owned a Volkswagen Beetle.
Okay.
An original Beetle.
Okay.
Now, you got to remember, my mom has two sisters and two brothers.
Oh shit, big family.
Yeah, so five kids.
In this Beetle.
In a Beetle. Like, apparently.
And there is a back seat.
There is a back seat. So the way she described it is grandma and grandpa in the front, three kids in the back seat, and then two of them on the parcel shelf behind.
Can you imagine how pissed you'd be if you had to share the parcel shelf? It's like, at least I could have stretched out.
Right.
But now I don't get to sit. I have to cram, and you're in the back glass. Ugh. Sun's beating down on you. It's like,
and you're over top switching of the engine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The engine's right underneath you. Oh, that's hilarious. You're all just sitting on top of the engine. And it's air cooled.
Yeah.
So there's a ton of heat coming off.
I'm like, I asked her, I'm like, how fast did it go? And she's like, we'd barely get up to 55.
So the road trips took a while.
Yeah. They weren't really road trips. They were just trips into town.
I bet they fucking hated it too.
Yeah. And then my grandpa got a 67 Corvette Stingray after that.
Practical.
Yeah, exactly. My grandma hated that car. Oh, I wanted that car so bad. 67 Corvette Stingray convertible.
Oh, man.
427 with a 4-speed.
Was that the one with the split window?
This is convertible.
Oh, all right.
The same
right.
body style.
Okay.
But yeah, 427 had the big engine,
yeah,
four speed transmission. It was blue with the white stripe. It was just, oh my God. Just like that one.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
Right.
It's a really pretty color too. Were those little vacuum actuated headlights?
Oh yeah, everything was vacuum actuated on this. The wipers, I think, were vacuum actuated on it. Fucking shit would break all the goddamn time.
Was it you who told me about that? Where it's like, if you see one of those old GMs with like saggy headlights, it's like, all right, you got a vac leak.
Oh, no, I didn't tell you about that, but that makes sense, though. Yeah, well, when my grandpa passed, we were all kind of wondering what happened to this, but my grandma sold it.
Because she hated it the whole time?
Well, she also just needed the money more than, you know, the sentimental value of holding onto a car.
Yeah.
So, and this thing, his did not look like that. His, the entire time I knew about this car, it sat in a barn.
You never saw it run?
Never saw it run. The engine was in another part of the barn.
Oh, shit.
Torn apart. Just a lump of rust at this point.
Just a block.
Yeah, just a bare block. I think the pistons were in another part of the barn.
Also a pile of rust.
Yeah. So, yeah, it never ran, unfortunately. And it would have cost so much money to get that thing back up and running.
Yeah.
It was so dilapidated at that point.
You could have done whatever you wanted to it.
Right. Well, I would love to try to get that block.
Like the original 427.
Yeah. At least use the block. Everything else can be whatever, but the engine block, at least.
That's fair. Just because it is an all-original numbers matching car.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, then that thing will bring some big money someday, whoever bought it and restored it, you know, but...
That is a gorgeous color.
Right.
That old steel blue.
Yeah, it was so good. Like, everybody thinks of red Corvettes, but yeah, I think the blue was really, really where it was at. Didn't look as good with the top up. Have to admit, not a great look with the top up.
Honestly, most soft tops don't.
Yeah, they really don't.
Like when I was younger, I hated soft tops for that reason.
Yeah,
because they look hideous when they're up.
350Z convertibles.
Oh God, that was horrible.
it's atrocious.
That ruined the body line of the car.
It did.
It was like, all right, we've got this beautiful coupe line, like, which is honestly so iconic. Like, how many times have you seen? Like, whenever, like, a comic book or a cartoon, they'll have a car in the background that's supposed mm-hmm. to be a sports car, and it's clearly a 350Z.
Yeah, it's a Z.
Yeah, and they did that, you know, there's nothing about the car in the whatever you're watching.
Right.
But they wanted an iconic body line.
Right, they just wanted, you know, to signify this is a sports car.
Yeah, and the Z is that one.
Mm-hmm.
It's that iconic body line. And they just... demolished it.
Yeah, it's with like, that convertible. All
right, let's take it and make it perfectly flat.
Right.
And then
a little bubble, you know, top.
Just super glue a bubble.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
Which is why when they did the 370Z, they actually overcorrected.
Yeah.
They designed the convertible first.
Oh.
Yeah. The 370Z was designed to be a convertible. This is what the sales training said anyways.
Okay. So it could be completely 100%
complete BS. Bullshit.
Yeah.
It wasn't sales training, it was the technical training I went to for the 370Z.
Okay, so that's legit, because yeah. You didn't have to lie to people.
Right, exactly. But yeah, the 370Z was designed to be a convertible first and then a coupe second.
Which those are always the best convertibles.
Yeah.
The ones that are designed as a convertible.
And I think with the top down, the 370Z convertible works really good. Like,
yeah, they even continue the body color down into the cab a little bit.
Yeah. And then with the top up, like, I think that actually works pretty well.
Yeah. It definitely better than the 350Z.
Oh, 100 times better.
Like, no chance.
Like, that's not bad because it still has that, like, swoopy, actually kind of, like, makes me think of a Solstice from that angle, but...
Which the Solstice was designed as a convertible.
The Solstice is a good looking car too. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, the Solstice looked good. I think it looked better than the Sky.
I think I like the Sky better just because I don't see him as much.
Because they're a little more rare.
It's just a rarity bias type thing.
I could see that. I just love that Pontiac, the little miniaturized Pontiac grills on it.
Yeah.
I think that looked great. The Sky had kind of the mouth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love
it. Yeah, I think I just like that front end a little bit better.
Yeah.
The Solstice was just a little bubbly.
It was a little bubbly, but I was like, I just, I've big fan of this, the split grill, the twin grill thing.
Yeah.
Like Pontiac and older BMW.
Right.
Not newer.
Not the BMW. Newer BMWs.
I see those now and I don't even recognize them as BMWs.
Right.
I'm like, what is that shiny thing? Drive? Oh, that's a BMW? Yeah, because they took their kidney grills and ruined it.
Yeah, gave it a gaping maw.
Yeah, but they still kept the split to try to keep their identity, but they lost the identity in it.
Right. All right, heretics, Matt pumping in here one more time. We actually ranted for way longer than I anticipated, so I'm actually going to cut it right there. But who knows, maybe another one of those B-roll episodes, you'll get to hear what we were talking about. Anyways, I, of course, need to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song. Colors off the album Traveler Part 1. You can find them at wheelstheband.bandcamp.com. I gotta thank Chris, my co-host, as always, for swinging by on a Thursday night to record this because I'm going away on vacation. I gotta thank all the listeners out there for listening and keeping up with us and putting up with all our technical difficulties. As always, if you want to find more of us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at religionofspeed.co. You can find us on YouTube at religionofspeed. And religiousspeed.com will come around eventually. Got some work to do there. So don't go there yet. It looks terrible. Don't judge. Just don't judge. Anyways, heretics, thank you again for listening. And until next time, peace out.